more people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We're your hosts today for the next hour, Paul Wearson.
And I'm Dennis Hart. Paul, happy to be with you again on this Wednesday. It's always a pleasure.
Yes, and it's rainy outside. Up at my farm, it's all liquid. The doors stick. My cat's unhappy. My grass is growing beyond my ability to cut it.
You told me you were going to try to cut it yesterday, but I guess you didn't.
No, I gave up because, number one, it was rainy, and number two, it's starting to look like a jungle out there.
Remember, we recently had a story about a floating tractor that was going to be at the farm show? Maybe that's what you needed, is a floating tractor.
I need a floating tractor or some kind of flotation device. And our by the way, our show is engineered today by Aladdin. So we're on in for a magic carpet ride, I suppose. Well, coming up on today's broadcast, Susan Franson tells us about some dedicated marchers who are braving this week's rain to get their message across. We'll also hear about a truly fun event that's coming up this weekend in Boone. And Maggie Westfold is here, as always, with one of her points to ponder. But first, Dennis has news from several newspapers around Ames.
And Paul, as always, we are going to start with news from the Boone News Republican, which reported on U.S. Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue's visit to the Farm Progress Show in Boone last week. Perdue said the Department of Agriculture may consider a second aid package for American farmers if commodity prices do not improve. He said that second round may depend on the outcome of World Trade Organization complaints between the U.S. and other trading partners over the series of competing tariffs put into place over the summer. Perdue's comments came days after the USDA announced details of its $12 billion farmer aid package to cover some of the losses farmers have suffered because of the tariffs. Since those tariffs were announced, corn prices have dropped from about $3.70 a bushel to $3.57. Soybean prices were about $10 a bushel in April. They've dropped to around $8.47 a bushel. The News Republican also has an update on the search for Jesse Leopold, who was 23 years old when he left his job in Jewell 2 years ago and simply vanished. Investigators have spent thousands of hours looking for him, but they have come up empty. In the Nevada Journal, word that a dog named Harley is no longer going to be able to live in Nevada unless his owners meet certain stipulations in the Nevada City Code regarding vicious animals. The Nevada City Council has upheld a notice sent to Roger Lunsford and Peggy Faulkner, a notice that declared their dog named Harley a vicious animal. This after several incidents in which Harley allegedly charged at or attacked people, and in one case, another dog. Now, in order to keep Harley in Nevada, his owners have to meet certain confinement, leash, and muzzle rules, as well as rules regarding enclosure, signs on their property, and insurance. The city will require proof that the dog's owners have not less than $500,000 per occurrence coverage for bodily injury to or death of any person or persons over damage to property, which could result from the ownership of Harley, the dog. In the Story City Herald, word that a Story City woman won first place at the celebration of Iowa Agriculture Art Exhibit recently. Naomi Friend won with a piece of art titled Red Angus Cows, which she produced using a cyanotype technique. Now, that is a process that produces a greenish-blue print. By winning, Friend is going to receive a cash prize and have her art displayed at the State Historical Building in Des Moines through the end of October. Congratulations. And there's a story in the Herald about an event taking place in Ames now through Saturday. It's called the Flathead Reunion, and it involves Pontiac automobiles made between 1926 and 1954. In this case, the term flathead refers to the old 6- and 8-cylinder engines with the valves in the block, not in the head. Well, this particular reunion is going to be headquartered in Ames at the Starlight Quality Inn, and if you want to see some of these classic cars, your best bet might be this coming Saturday morning when they're going to be on display starting at 10 o'clock on Douglas Avenue, north of Main Street in downtown Ames. That happens to be right where KHOI Radio is. In the Tri-County Times, word that friends and family of a 1-year-old boy in Maxwell are joining forces to help find a stem cell donor for the child. Weston Robinette was diagnosed with leukemia when he was only 7 months old. This Friday, September 7th, at the Maxwell Community Center, any resident of Story County between the ages of 18 and 44 can drop by and have their cheek swabbed to see if they might be a bone marrow match for Weston. The process takes only about 10 minutes. The event will take place between 2 and 8 p.m. this Friday, September 7th. The Times also reports that details have nearly been finalized about a planned renovation of the Ballard Middle School, and voters may be asked as soon as this December to approve a bond to make those renovations. If everything goes as planned, the project could be put out to bid next February and perhaps be completed by the summer of 2020. And the Times has a long story about a dog named Kimber. This seems to be a day for dogs. Kimber is a 3.5-year-old black lab who is the new therapy dog for the Collins Maxwell Elementary School. On the first day of school, Kimber was taken into every classroom and introduced to all the students. Now, Kimber is usually going to stay in the special ed classroom, but she can also be used to help any child who might be having a rough moment. And that is Kimber's number one mission in the school, to be a soothing presence for a child who needs one. And that's our summary of the week's news from the pages of the Boone News Republican, the Nevada Journal, the Story City Herald, and the Tri-County Times. Of course, those papers are going to have a lot more news when their print editions come out this week. And a reminder, I'll be right back here on Friday with a look at news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. Paul, I think there have been days when we needed Kimber to be in this studio to calm us down, don't you think?
I've needed a comfort dog since it started raining 5 weeks ago.
Well, Kimber could help out, apparently.
Well, and I'm a little more concerned about Harley in Nevada. You know, with a name like that, it sounds like he should be a bespeckled, kind of quiet, bookish dog. And here he is, a vicious animal. You know, Harley seems like a character that Wally Cox would play in a movie.
Well, good luck to Harley in staying in Nevada, and certainly good luck to Kimber, who's there to help those kids in the elementary school. And Kimber, if you ever have any spare minutes, trust me, Paul and I need comforting right here.
I just hope they never mix up the two dogs. It could be quite a day to remember.
It could be, couldn't it?
Well, I'll tell you, our intrepid reporter, Susan Franson, has been away on vacation almost all summer, but she came back home just in time to take off on an unusual road trip.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Dennis. I can hardly wait to tell you and our listeners about the unusual road trip that I took this week. I had decided to meet up with the First Nation Farmer Climate Unity March when it stopped in Ames on day 3, which happened to be Labor Day. Last year, I drove to Montezuma on day 3 of the Climate Justice Unity March of 2017, a 90-mile march from Little Creek Camp near Iowa City to the climate rally of the state capitol. This year's march is even more significant because it is publicizing a landmark lawsuit on eminent domain, which will be heard before the Iowa Supreme Court on September 12th, just 4 days after the march ends on September 8th. This year's route runs from Des Moines to Fort Dodge. Regular listeners to Local Talk heard about the march and the lawsuit last week on Monday and Wednesday. On Thursday, a special hour-long Heart of Iowa program brought you powerful statements by 4 of the landowners suing the Iowa Utilities Board. With all that coverage, I was afraid my road trip would be an anticlimax. But the First Nations had not had a chance to tell their stories. I had plenty of time to interview them because the overnight stop in Ames was at Oakwood Road Church, just across the street from my apartment. So I was able to begin my trip by walking over when the crew bringing the gear drove into the parking lot around noon. Sarah Spain, one of the organizers, told me about yesterday's overnight stay in Huxley.
When we pulled into Huxley, that we got to the park where we were supposed to be, and it's a puddle. I knew it was going to work if it was nice and
still. So what happened?
So I just Googled the closest church was a block and a half away, and it's the Lutheran Church, and Norwegian Lutheran Church. And got their emergency number for the pastor, and called Pastor Eric Swanson, and he said, "What?
Yeah,
we need an emergency to get people off the road and into a dry place." So he has only been the pastor there for a couple years. So he had, I think, the congregation's like 500 people. So he said, "Well, I got to check." I said, "Why don't you come over and meet us at the park to see if you'd like to host us?
Yes.
Check us out first."
Yes.
And so he came. We got the mayor on the phone, and within 30 minutes, we had the most amazing place to stay. So we've had this kind of stuff happen.
Yes.
The Hallmark. And it's been quite amazing. My job is logistic. That's my job, to worry and think. And my Indigenous friends are trying to help me not have to do that so much and still do my job good. This is our food truck.
Very colorful. Converted school bus is coming in with a big sign that says Veggie Thumper.
When the truck was parked, a slender young woman with colorful and striking clothes got out of the bus, which was a work of art, really. It was a converted school bus with wonderful bright paintings on it.
Hello! So, are you the cook for this whole big group?
Yep.
Awesome.
Yep, it's been pretty fun and challenging. Early mornings, 5 o'clock.
Challenging, I think, is probably an understatement,
yeah.
Right?
And everything's vegan, so.
Do you always cook out of the truck?
Well, I don't always cook out of the truck. We're going to probably use the church kitchen. This morning we had sweet potato pancakes and red potato hash.
What's tonight?
Tonight we're doing Taco Monday. So we're going to have a pulled chicken and black bean tacos and refried beans. So I'm pretty excited.
It's vegan, but you're having chicken?
Quotations. Not chicken. It's jackfruit. It just looks like chicken. People think it's meat. I let them think that. But they figured me out now. We're making snacks right now to keep everybody fueled while we go ahead. So we stop everywhere and we have to make food for our group of 30 to 40 people. We went through 12 pounds of red beans and rice yesterday. I'm not even sure how many collard greens that was, and a whole bunch of cornbread. 2 pans of cornbread, matter of fact. So it's pretty awesome to see what the marchers can eat, and it's been a pretty fun, challenging event, and then doing all of this in the rain.
And you're looking forward to a whole week of this.
Yep, a whole week of it. What is today? Monday?
As the generator was set up and the gear was unloaded from the truck, I went back across the street to wait for the marchers to arrive. In the late afternoon, I could see that they were beginning to come in, so I walked over and walked into the main building, and there was an old friend of mine, Donnell Wannaty. Why are you here?
I'm here because I want my Iowa unified, and I want the people to be come together to fight this pipeline still. Our fight isn't done, and we still have to be worried about what this pipeline will do to our state and our communities along this route, which is Nebraska, South Dakota, Iowa, and Illinois. So that's why I'm still in this, and that's why I'm still marching to bring awareness to this subject. It's been 4 years, and I've tried to give up a couple of times, but my sister convinced me if you talk to one person a day, that's 365 people you've talked to so far, and you've been doing that for 4 years, you know, and it's not going to be, you know, fast, but it'll take years, and it's getting there, and I think we're at the tipping point where we're going to go to a better way of making change for our environment and the people that live on this earth.
Is it special for you to be with so many people from other tribes?
Yeah, because, you know, we are the only tribe in Iowa right now, the Meskwaki people, and we understand there were indigenous people here prior to us being here. So them coming back here is a way of unifying people together for this, not just, you know, for climate change, but also the farmers, and make them aware and stand up for their rights also against eminent domain.
Have you had any special experiences on this march?
Just seeing all the people and reminding them, you know, why we're doing this, and basically to care about everybody as we're doing this. You know, sometimes we forget that we are human beings, and human beings have no boundaries really except, you know, your own personal space. And right now we have to do this together because a rising tide raises all ships.
As I walked out of the building, I saw a couple of men setting up a teepee. It was the traditional white canvas with long wooden poles, obviously cut from tall trees. It was a symbolic gathering place for the many tribes who were there. I talked with people from all over the country. Here is a collage of the stories I heard.
Foxy Jackson, I'm from Oakland, California. I'm here to stand with my sisters and brothers against climate change, environmental injustices. We need clean water, we need clean air, soil, we need to stop eminent domain, and I'm willing to stand with the people who are willing to stand against it also. It's my first time in Iowa, my first time on this march, and my first time meeting all these people, and we've already all become really good friends and family. And I'm very, very happy to be here.
And what is your tribe?
My tribe are the Chichimecas, which are from Guanajuato, Mexico. And we were conquered by the Spaniards. And so that is where we get our Spanish dialect, our Spanish language from. We currently don't know our traditions or our native language. And so I'm doing research and trying to see if I can find family members that still exist out there somewhere.
Do Jimmy Tidwell.
Before Standing Rock, you know, I was lost in a way, you know, in my life. So this gives me, you know, some purpose, you know, doing something good and being connected with people like you guys, you know. And I think that's probably one of the most awesome things, you know, that's came into my life, you know, is being connected with people like you guys, you know.
I like the connections we found together. Hi, I'm Kathy Burns.
Hi, Kathy.
All Indigenous peoples, you know, we struggle. We have, what they call, you know, generational trauma, you know, that is, for our people, you know, alcoholism, you know, suicide, those are all, you know, part of, effects of generational trauma, I think. And that's something I struggle with all my life, so... right up until Standing Rock, you know, I was just getting clean and sober, and just the spirit of Standing Rock, you know, and what it stood for, and the peace and prayer, and, you know, the culture, you know, and that's been something I think that was missing in my life, you know, because for someone who's trying to stay sober, I think series of events that happened in my life, you know, that led me here, you know, and this gives me something, you know, to, I guess... to be proud of, you know, helping our people.
Yes. And all people.
Yes, all people, yes. Because it's not just a Native issue. It's an everybody issue.
But people who aren't Native need to recognize that it's their issue together. That's why this First Nation Farmer March is so important. It's First Nation Farmer Unity Climate March.
Right. And that's
climate unity.
That's what I was telling Kathy a little while ago. You know, I am sympathetic, you know, to these landowners, you know, because something else, you know, I've learned over the years too is our history and how the West was won and how our land was lost. And now, you know, you see that same type of injustice happening, you know, to these landowners, you know, for what they call a public utility, you know, that does not benefit anybody. You know, it's we're taking all the risk. These landowners are taking all the risk, you know, for this this oil to be shipped overseas, and that's sad to see.
I've been appreciating Jimmy's and Millie's and all of our Indigenous brothers and sisters' perspectives on the fact that we are, we quote, landowners, and I did own land on the pipeline route originally, that it's stolen land. And despite that, everyone has been sympathetic to those landowners and gracious about the fact that we're all fighting this together. And at the same time reminding us, there's no, this land is your land, this land is our land, it's stolen land. But because your empathy is overriding your indignance, you are joining together gracefully with us in this fight. And it's such a beautiful thing.
Well, I was wondering, when I saw the list of marchers, and I saw how many different peoples were represented, somebody from Alaska, somebody from, and I there were only two Meskwaki, and the rest are all from other tribes. And I thought, I wondered if there would be
more Meskwaki?
No. Well, what I wondered was that if people were coming so that they could bond with other Native peoples.
They came because Christine asked them.
Yeah, well,
a lot of them. I didn't know who asked
Christine.
You. Christine asked you to come.
Yeah.
Christine is the director of Indigenous Iowa and the founder of that, and she has been so important to make sure that we have come together in a positive way.
I believe you are one of the organizers of this march. Is that right?
Yes, I am. I am the Indigenous organizer on this march. And I'm Plains Cree Salto from the George Gordon First Nation, and I grew up in Winnipeg. Manitoba, Canada, and I've been living in Iowa for 12 years now. I founded Indigenous Iowa because I saw a real need for a larger Indigenous voice in Iowa, because this state was cleared out pretty viciously, and there's not a lot of Indigenous people living outside of like the Meskwaki settlement or outside of Sioux City that are being heard. You know, and I just felt that this was a really colonized state, both biologically, culturally, socially, and physically, you know, in terms of genocide and removal and assimilation, that it was important to start raising awareness and bringing a presence, like, to, like, what people would call, like, not Indian country, you know, like, where there's not a lot of Indigenous people, like, residing. But that's not to say that, like, there's not a really strong presence within the Meskwaki settlement nation and Sioux City, but they're small as well. And so I just want to be standing side by side with them and working in solidarity with them and, you know, doing what we can to, like, move forward past this, like, this colonial system that's really broken us down and hurt us tremendously.
Did you come to Little Creek from Standing Rock?
No, I founded Little Creek. I guess you could say I came to it from Standing Rock, but I live here. So I wanted to continue to fight the pipeline. I didn't think the fight was over because there was still construction going on in Iowa at the time. And also we had the court case coming up, and so I just felt it was necessary to bring more attention to the fact that we still had a fighting chance to beat this corporate conglomerate that has basically privatized the profit but socialized the risk for the people.
Were you instrumental in bringing the First Nation Farmer Climate Unity March together?
Yes. Ed and I talked some time ago about founding, you know, like something akin to the Indian Cowboy Alliance that started a while ago, but is it dissolved at this point? And we just said, you know, like with climate change, the people that we need to listen to the most are Indigenous people and the farmers. They are really connected to the land in a way that a lot of people are not. Even though farmers are mostly settler descendants and have colonized land that's been taken from Indigenous people, at this point, we need to work in unity and in solidarity because we are literally burning up, and like we need to find some sort of unity to stop what's going on at this right now.
My name is Lakasha. That's short for Lakasha Yokhot Lakipt, and in the Nez Perce language that has a rough translation to touches lightning. So that's where my name comes from. However, on paper, due to federal recognition, I am enrolled in the Cayuse Nation from Pendleton, Oregon. To add to that, my bloodline derives from Chugach, Alaska, along with Wasco in Central Oregon, and Nez Perce and Cayuse, of course, and then Klamath from Southern Oregon and Yaqui from Arizona.
So how did you get here?
Funny story. So I was out at Standing Rock in 2016 from the end of August, early September to February during the eviction. I was contacted to help transport supplies to Little Creek Camp. I'm sure some of us may be familiar with that. And so I transported supplies down here to establish Little Creek. But the funny thing was, though, at Standing Rock, a lot of people would ask me where I come from. And as you may remember from my bloodline, I told people I come from Iowa, but it was on an acronymical level, right? It was Idaho, Oregon, Washington, and Alaska. I never thought that I would end up in Iowa transporting supplies for an additional camp to resist the DAPL pipeline. And I came down here. I've been fortunate to experience the black squirrels, the fireflies, cardinals, very beautiful. and the humidity, you know, out of I put it in the top three. I spoke of a winter in a teepee and Standing Rock. That was, you know, an extreme. A summer in Iraq, okay, and then humidity of Iowa. And those are my three extremes there.
How did you get to spend your summer in Iraq?
I joined the United States Marine Corps at a young age, and I was augmented to the 11th MEU Marine Corps Marine Expeditionary Unit, and went over in 2004 and came back in 2005, thankfully.
So you've had quite a bit of life experience thus far.
Yeah, definitely. It's been very hard to difficult and actually wrap my head around the whole thing. I think joining the military, I seen a way out from the average reservation conditions for a male. And to put it plainly, I had a better chance at surviving in Iraq than on a reservation, a Native American reservation here in the United States. Fortunately, I was able to come home. And but with that, it was very difficult, and I still deal with it today because ultimately I feel as if I was colonizing Iraq under the orders of the United States. And it's very, very hard for me as an indigenous person of this continent to come to an acceptance of that. And, you know, even with that, like being at Standing Rock, to watch our own military come in on us again.
That is our reporter, Susan Franzen. Thank you, Susan. Susan will be hosting the Fallon Forum this afternoon at 4, right here on KHOI.
Well, it's 29 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI-FM. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Paul Wearson, along with Dennis Hart.
And again, good to be with you today, Paul, on this rainy day. Rainy days and Wednesdays always get me down.
I love that song, and it's very appropriate.
And, well, it was Mondays, but I just changed the words for this broadcast.
It's Wednesday.
Well, Paul, if you're looking for something to do this weekend, and I know you and I always are looking for something to do on weekends, something that's a whole lot of fun, well, here are two words we all need to know. Pufferbilly Days. They are taking place this Friday through Sunday in Boone. And joining us live on the phone right now to tell us all about it is Alyssa Knudsen of the Boone County Chamber of Commerce. Alyssa, good morning.
Good morning. How are we?
Well, we are fine. Are you staying dry this morning?
Not so much. I'm hoping that this weekend we'll have some drier weather, but keep our fingers crossed. But so far, we're making ways through the rain. So.
Gotcha. Well, you've got a big event coming up this weekend. It's the biggest of events, Pufferbilly Days, really a signature event for your community. Tell us all about it. What's going to happen?
Yes. So Puffer Billy Days, it's this Friday through Sunday, and we've got all sorts of different events taking place. I can kind of run through the schedule a little bit with you guys, but on Friday we've got the carnival opens. We have the food court, the beer tent. We're also doing a classic car show taking place on Story Street from 5 to 8 that night. We're going to be doing our opening ceremonies and then just kind of kicking off our entertainment for the night, which is Casey Musicman. So he's kind of more of a country act. I don't know if everybody's familiar with The Voice, but he was a contestant on the show The Voice, and he was on Blake Shelton's team. So we're excited to have him, and it should be a really good night. And then also, I guess, on Saturday, we have all sorts of different activities. We have a 5K, 10K run taking place. We have a craft fair, a parade, which is one of probably the largest in the state. We also have carnival. We have our bags tournament. We have quilt show, motorcycle show. We're also doing a spike driving contest. That's a new event that we're bringing back this year. We also have our Iowa State tailgate party, so we're going to have some TVs playing the game and whatnot so people can come down and enjoy a beverage and watch the game. And also that evening we have more entertainment, so it's called Foreplay. They're a band out of Minnesota, and they're kind of your classic rock. They do all sorts of hits throughout the years and whatnot, so they should be really good. I'm excited to have them. And then on Sunday, we're also doing, we do a Puffer Billy Days church service. We have a disc golf tournament. We have mud volleyball, which is a really big event for us. We have our bike ride, unlimited. We are doing $15 unlimited wristbands from 1 to 3 for the carnival that day. And then we also have kind of our pet show and our lip sync and our spelling bee as well taking place that day.
Holy cow, you've got a lot of things going on over there. And I know Paul is very familiar with Puffer Billy Days, and he wants to ask a question or two. But let me ask you a quick one. That parade, who's going to take part in it? How big is your parade on Saturday?
So our parade, we've got close to about 100 entries, and that usually takes about, I would say probably 2 hours just to kind of go through the whole entire route. So it is, it's a big parade. So a lot of entries and a lot of things to see.
Well, you know, Paul here, Susan Franson and I did a road trip at one time over to the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway, and what impressed me about that was the number of volunteers involved in just keeping that organization going. And then Puffer Billy Days comes every year, so there are two big demands for volunteers there. And what struck me was, in the case of when we talked about Puffer Billy Days and the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway, the number of volunteers that turn out in Boone. I was really impressed when I heard the numbers. Now, Alyssa, you must have a lot of volunteers involved in Puffer Billy Days again, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it takes an army to pull off Puffer Billy Days. So we have, several hundred volunteers that we recruit for the festival, whether that's, our steering committee, which kind of helps plan throughout the whole entire year. We also have our logistics crew, which is kind of our setup and tear down and all of the behind the scenes stuff. I have all of my event coordinators, or I guess my event chairs that help me out. And then within each of those events, too, there's multiple volunteers that are needed as well. And then we have our beer garden, so that takes quite a bit of volunteers. We have ticket sales and memorabilia, and, it just takes about a couple hundred of us to pull it off.
That's what always impresses me about, here I'm a Story City, and we have Scandinavian Days, and we have the same thing, the parade, all the other activities, and an army of volunteers every year to put that on, and everybody shows up, and that's, I'm sure, true at Puffer Billy Days, too. And I noticed that you have an opportunity for everyone to watch the big game. Was it a problem for you realizing that Puffer Billy Days is the same weekend as the Iowa State game?
It's always been that same weekend, and so we just try to make the best of it and, allow, obviously, our festival goers to have the opportunity to watch the game as well. So that's why we always have the tailgate party and bring some TVs downtown and allow them to enjoy the festival along with watching the game so they don't miss out on anything. So
now, I'm sure Puffer Billy Days has grown over the years. About how many people Do you expect to come this weekend in terms of visitors? We're talking more than a few hundred, aren't we?
Yes, absolutely. I would say, I mean, numbers that we've kind of ran from the past, I would say you're looking at close to probably 20,000-25,000 people.
Oh, wow.
I mean, plus for the three days, yeah.
Well, look at the financial impact of that. That's tremendous, you know.
Well, this is a big deal for your town. This is your signature event then during the year, isn't it?
Yes, this is probably one of the biggest events throughout the year, at least for the chamber anyways. I mean, we do have a few other things, like Super Nationals are also taking place right now, so that's a big one for the town, and a few other things throughout the year that take place. But at least on my end of things, this is the big Super Bowl of the year, so...
Yeah, the Supernaturals, that's on a dirt track south of Highway 30. And what did are the date,
correct.
What are the dates for that, Alyssa? When does that run?
That is actually taking place right now, I believe. I'm not quite sure when they started, but it's all this week, and I believe they wrap up on Saturday, I want to say. So it's going on right now. So a lot of stuff taking place here in Boone.
So it really dovetails with Pufferbilly Days in many ways, and so... That's a double whammy. I like the timing.
Yes.
As long as you don't get tied up in traffic on Story Street. And when I think of Boone, I think of Story Street and all the marvelous homes on that road and that street. It's such a beautiful place to what way to come into town into Boone on Story Street. All those great mansions and fine old homes and vibrant downtown business district. Almost every storefront's occupied. And the theater is still going, I hope. Is the theater still going in downtown Boone?
Yes, it is. Yep. I believe they have shows every single week, and so that's still, you know, alive and active. So,
well, Alyssa, of course, Pufferbilly Days evokes the history of the railroad. The railroad, a very, very important part of life in Boone, the founding of the community as well as the founding of Ames. In fact, the same man who founded Ames founded Boone, John Blair, platted Boone back in 1865, and you had the Chicago and Northwestern Railroad station built there, and it was built here in Ames about the same time. So that brings us to the importance of the railroad to this moment in your community. Of course, the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad is a major, major tourist draw every year.
Yeah, absolutely. So Boone has obviously a large railroad heritage, and I guess this is our 42nd year of Pufferbilly Days. And so I don't know if you guys are aware, but a Pufferbilly is actually an engine, and so that's kind of how we got our festival name, is just because of our railroad history and whatnot. And, you know, 42 years ago, they decided that they wanted to celebrate that, and so they chose Pufferbilly Days, and it's been that ever since. And so we try and tie in some different railroad activities throughout the festival as well. Like I said, we were bringing back the spike driving contest this year, so we're excited to have that back and whatnot. So
I've driven spikes. I worked on the Chicago Northwestern Railway right after I got out of college and waiting to go to the Army. We built the switchyard between Nevada and Ames.
Is that right?
And if we hadn't done that, you'd never been able to drive through Ames. There are enough trains.
Oh,
but,
wow.
Yeah, I learned to spike. And Gandhi dancers, they were called. These were men. This is 1966. And these men had been working since the 1920s. They rolled their own cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
And they could use a hammer just like, they were artists. They could drive two spikes at one time. And they were just... They did things I couldn't do. And on the railroad, when you're out working, laying track, there's nothing that can be carried by one man. It takes, and we use the same tools they use to lay the intercontinental, you know, rail tongs, where eight men carry a rail. And our foreman, John, had a stopwatch and bib overalls, and he was an old railroad guy. And so I see that all the time in Boone, Alyssa, because, number one, it's still the headquarters of Union Pacific in the area. Number two, you've got the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway, and you have that great mainline track through town. So the railroad in both Ames and Boone, as Dennis pointed out, is a key thing in our existence and in our daily life, trying to get down
Duff. Here, yeah.
You have done a good job in Boone of preserving and keeping that Valley Railway, the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway. And for those who have not ridden that, and I have, and of course you have, Paul, it's a marvelous ride over the Des Moines River Canyon and back, et cetera. And there are other things you can do there. But that's really a marvelous thing. How did the community decide, Alyssa, if you know, years ago, to preserve that and make that a tourist attraction?
You know, I guess I don't know. I don't have a ton of history on that. But, you know, like you had said, it's just, it's a huge impact for the community. I mean, they offer rides throughout the year. They do different events. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, like the Santa train and they do a pumpkin train and dinner train. And so it's just, and it's an awesome attraction to have here in the county.
It is.
And really, it takes so many volunteers. I remember our road trip over there. You know, these are volunteers. In any community, you have volunteers making a commitment for a festival weekend. There, you have almost a year-round need for a lot of people to be involved in that Boone and Scenic Valley Railway. It's really very demanding. So I think of Boone as volunteerism town. Right, Alyssa?
Yes, exactly. We, you know, we always... I guess throughout the year we have different events that we, you know, unique people for, and everybody, they always show up. They always, you know, are willing to help out. And so, I mean, our community is awesome with that, and they definitely back us when we need help. So,
well, you know, everyone needs to know that I've heard it mispronounced. It's not Puffer Belly. It's Puffer Billy.
And Puffer Billy, yep.
I bet you have to correct people all the time. They'll walk, hey, I'm here for Puffer Belly Days. Well, no, you're not. It's Puffer Billy Days. Come on.
The only reason Paul said that, Alyssa, is that he had a big breakfast today. That's the only reason he brought that up,
I think. A puffer belly right now.
Alyssa, what would you like people
you
to
go.
Know in the last couple of minutes here about this weekend? It's a big weekend, but what last words would you like to pass on to folks who are thinking about going, but, you know, they're thinking it's going to be crowded, 25,000 people. How would you encourage them to come?
You know, I just think we have something for all ages. So, you know, whether you come as a family, whether you're, you know, 70 plus, there's going to be something that you will find and, you know, have fun doing. So, I mean, I just think that probably the biggest thing for everyone is that we have something for everyone. So bring the whole family down. Everybody can kind of participate in something different and still enjoy themselves. So we've got a lot to offer.
Well, I wonder if I should try this bike driving contest, see if my skills from 1966 are still there.
Let's see. That would be 52
yes.
years ago.
52 years? 52 years?
Okay. Please do. Yep. Come on over.
Well, now, wait.
We'd love to have you.
You do have medical treatment
Saturday
over there.
Yeah, I need it. I need an assurance of medical evacuation if something goes wrong. That's really hard labor. And, you know, that was my acquaintance with the railway, and we did it in the midst of a very cold winter.
Uh-huh.
I was covered with creosote from the ties and all kinds of liquids that froze on my coat.
In fact, you've got a bit of creosote on you this morning.
Yeah, I'm guilty
from
of
those days.
Yeah, creosote is part of my memory. I still have nightmares about creosote, but I might join that spike driving contest.
Alyssa, it has been an absolute joy to have you on the air on Local Talk today. Thank you so much for taking your time to join us.
And I'm so happy that you're
yes.
here, and I hope that we have 20,000 plus, and if it's not going to be me, it's going to be someone winning
someone
that
else.
Spike driving contest. Ooh. Thank you, Alyssa.
Yes.
Thank you, Alyssa.
Yep.
Take care, Alyssa.
You guys, yep.
All right. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
That's going to be a fun event. Maybe we ought to just head over there this weekend. What do you think?
Wouldn't that be fun? Yeah. I just think that it's always I love talking about those local festivals, it's Scandinavian Days in Story City or the big 4th of July celebration in Slater or Puffer Billy Days, because, number one, I've been involved as a volunteer, and I love to promote these festivals, as well observe the fact that it's community, and people turn out every year to make it happen, and that moves me a great deal.
And it brings the communities together, and that's a wonderful thing in Iowa that a lot of states don't have, and we do.
I know, I just think that's wonderful. And a lot of states don't have Maggie Westfald either.
No, in fact, nobody else has Maggie, and we're happy to have her.
Oh, yeah, Maggie is going to be here with her points to ponder, and I always wonder what she's going to say. Maggie, you're here.
Thank you. What a lead-in. Thank you, both of you, Dennis and Paul. And hello again, KHY listeners. Our kids are back in school. So when I decided to do this Points to Ponder segment, teaching the honorable profession, I first asked my teacher, my favorite teacher of the past 25 years, my daughter Pam, what should I be sure to say? She said, Mom, I just read it again, what I've heard over and over and what extensive research affirms. For so many people, there was one significant relationship in life while growing up that helped overcome every other adverse condition that made a difference for them. And not surprisingly, they will often name a teacher. It was no different for me. I was a lucky kid. Adversity was not prevalent in my growing up years. I was a farm kid, part of a large family with a loving and hardworking mom and dad, and I liked school at Colo High. I made decent grades. I had fun playing 6-on-6 basketball. I even cracked the honor roll list a few times. And at this point in life, the fact that I didn't keep myself on that honor roll is a mixed bag of memories. There are the stern faces, of course, Mom and a few teachers pointing out my studies, pointing out my abilities as opposed to those C's. There are also all the great times I had not worrying about much, seeing how well I could do on a test without boning up. But let's say that when my kids were growing up and I pulled out my grade card, which I remembered as stellar, to make a point, well, I quickly switched gears and told them about their grandma who had been salutatorian of her class. Edna Robinson, Miss Robbie, as we called her, was my business education teacher in high school. She was a smallish woman, a round, smiling face, salt-and-pepper permed hair, always dressed nicely, and drove a big, shiny black Buick sedan that I would guess she had detailed weekly, though I never asked her. Miss Robbie never married, but she would smile when she mentioned her special friend, a widower, and talk of how she respected marriage. She taught typing, bookkeeping, and shorthand, and she'd been at it for many years when I sat in her classroom, so her teaching style was firmly in place. Do what you came for, and you would have no issues with Miss Robbie. Mess around, and you might just get an earful and or a trip down the hallway. She taught me to type and assured me, nicely, thank heavens, that that D I got the first freshman semester would improve with practice. I'd never seen a D, good Lord, on my grade card, and what a low blow that was. She taught me shorthand, which went better than typing, and she taught me bookkeeping, and stayed after class with me and others to help us find that lost penny we'd never have spotted on our own. There's a reason, folks, that I never worked as a bookkeeper. She stepped outside the business education arena with me and encouraged my love for sports and for art. She had me come in after school and help her create and reproduce program handouts for school events like class plays and ball games. We had great conversations while we created, like the time she chided me for seeming overly gleeful at seeing my name in the local headlines the day after a basketball game, when I nonchalantly said, "Well, yeah, but it's fun to see my name in bold." She grinned at me and said she guessed she could understand that. And Edna Robinson was the first soul on this earth to introduce me in 1963 to a feminist way of thinking. I shared this memory years back at her funeral in the Methodist Church in Colo. Family, friends, and former students alike all understood, and they smiled wide smiles. She was late for class after lunch one day. She was never late. Miss Robbie finally marched in the door, stopped before us, and said with a look of consternation, "It is not fair that men teachers should be paid more than women. There is nothing right about it." And then she just shook it off and said something about getting back to the business of teaching. The details of how I ended up going from Colo High School graduation to living in Des Moines, going to the American Institute of Business, all taken care of in roughly 3 weeks' time, is not a short story. Miss Robbie made it happen. And I mean totally. My hardworking parents nor I had the money nor the know-how for that opportunity to have taken place in my young life. I finished at AIB after 9 months with my stenographic certificate and wonderful memories and headed for my new job as a clerk typist at the Iowa State Highway Commission. The first matter at hand after receiving my first paycheck was that monthly payment to Miss Robbie, the payment amount set by me as she wanted, returning the money she had made available for tuition and books to see me through AIB, all interest-free. I was only one of a long list of lucky kids she helped over the years, and she said the same to each of us when we tried to thank her. All I ask is that you pay the money back and you do what you can for someone else someday. Miss Robbie was my difference maker. My 10-year clerical career evolved with extensive writing for bosses who did not like to write. I eventually transitioned from clerical positions to writing government documents, a wonderful opportunity for a kid with no 4-year degree. And all the while, I was writing memoir and poetry in my free time. I'd like to share one of those poems with you, one that may give you a picture of the character Miss Robbie could be beyond the classroom. Keep in mind that the scene in this poem was in the mid-60s. The women's movement was on the horizon, and we young teenage girls, a bit full of ourselves at times, could get on that last one nerve of a traditional lady and teacher like Miss Robbie, who collectively shook her concerned head. How Miss Robbie made our business her business. Prim and petite, with a sprinkling of salt peppering her 50-ish permed hair, she stepped with purpose down the early 60s noonday high school hallway. Oh, did she ever! Then she moved over and up behind an unaware pair of black and kind of tight stirrup pants, sashaying their oblivious way down towards study hall and some focused freshman book report composition. "If you could see yourself from back here, you wouldn't wear those things," were her harsh words on a high whisper in a bewildered ear, punctuated by her thumb and pointer finger resting lightly at the nape of Francis's now attentive neck. The Natalie-dressed business ed instructor then took a direct left into her classroom as a pretty much unaffected, nice freshman kid took a right into her study hall, and the stunned hallway buzzed on low. All who witnessed that unrehearsed scene after lunch that day recorded their personal takeaway for posterity, and one young freshman likely needed many more years to fully comprehend that no matter whether an opinionated gesture was necessary or who may have been right or wrong, that a teacher does not have to give a dang beyond her classroom walls. Thank you, KHOI audience, for listening as I shared my story about the difference maker in my own life. Maybe you're thinking of a difference maker who was there for you. Maybe it was a teacher, one who cared like Edna Robinson cared about me. Rest in peace, Miss Robbie, and thank you.
What a marvelous piece.
Oh, thank yes, you. And I Boy. Think everyone has, as you pointed out, Maggie, some pivotal person in their lives. And you know, when I volunteer at the elementary school, it's a brilliant story, in the break room there's a sign that says, "The teaching profession is the founding of all other professions."
Mm-hmm. And Amen.
That's very true, because, yes, you know, whatever we bring to the equation comes from what we learned when we were young. And Abe Lincoln said, well, I think maybe I had 3 years of formal education. Because basically, you know, out in the wilderness where he lived, a teacher would be there for a while and then move on. Mm-hmm. And for Abe Lincoln, it was his stepmother, mm-hmm, who was his great influencer. In fact, Sarah outlived Abe.
Mm.
And he, his mother died when he was 9, and Thomas, his father, went down to Kentucky and told this woman he'd pay her debts if she'd marry him, so she moved back to Indiana.
Ah.
And here was Abe and his sister, Sarah, and when the woman came into the cabin, she noticed snow on the blanket up where they slept. "This will not do." And she found books for Abe. Abe's real parents, Nancy Hanks and Thomas, real literate. And when Abe was 7, he handled all their letters and correspondence.
Wow.
A 7-year-old.
7.
You know, your piece, I was thinking about 3 teachers who made a tremendous impact on my life, and I wrote them down while you were reading your piece. Miss Ivankovich, my 4th grade teacher at Fremont Elementary in Fresno. She had a 1956 Thunderbird, white Thunderbird. Everybody knew when she drove in that she had this T-Bird.
Wow.
Miss Ivankovich wasn't much older than we were. Well, I mean, this was in 1959-60. She was probably in her 20s. Mm-hmm. She lived until just a few years ago. And when she passed away, she was 95 years old. And I cried. I had tears in my eyes when she passed away. Mr. Bicknell, my 8th grade geography teacher at Hamilton Junior High. And Mr. Munson, my first college journalism teacher who got me into this business because he was the first man who ever said, you could do this. No one had ever said that to me because I'd always wanted to be a broadcaster. He gave me that. And that's what your piece brought back for me, is those people who have made a tremendous impact on our lives. And if we're lucky, we have those people. If we're lucky.
Yeah, for Abe Lincoln, it was his stepmother, Sarah. For me, it was Fred Clark, my football coach and history teacher, who picked me for stardom in some way. I don't know what happened, but I went through a personality change that echoed through my entire life. And that's where where is your confidence founded?
Right.
Your confidence is founded in her.
I've thought about this so many times over the years. What did she see in me that that she gave me that chance in life? And literally, you know, she came to our home, talked to my parents, told them what she wanted to do, and luckily, they were okay with my going to that big, scary city of Des Moines to live. My mother was very concerned about it, and she just made it. She made it all work. There were lots of details, but luck is the only word I know.
Yeah.
You know, love. There's a lot of love from a woman like that who does that for students. She didn't have children of her own, I remember her sitting with me at the counselor's desk there at AIB when we were making the plans. And this woman said to Miss Robbie, is Margaret your daughter? And she said, no, but if I could have a daughter, this would be the one I would have. You know, she just – see, I'm going to make myself cry here. she was just a wonderful lady, and so many students would tell you the same thing.
Thank you for sharing that, and it's okay to cry on this broadcast. It's okay. We'll have you back next week.
Thank you. I'd love to be back.
We have to go. Thank you, Maggie, and thank you, everyone else, for listening to Local Talk. We've been your hosts. I'm Dennis Hart, and you?
Paul Wilson. And today's program was engineered by the irrepressible Aladdin. Local Talk airs today at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m., right here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also remember that you can hear a recording of this show later today online at khoifm.org. And you can find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Also, remember that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org.
Our theme song, as always, Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their marvelous CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley, who, as I've said before, was a marvelous woman herself. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, come on down, we'll train you, and join the Local Talk team.
Stay tuned for headline news in Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9. And remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and
we'll see you again on the radio. Stay dry today.
KHOI is sponsored in part by Ames Electric Services, providing the option for any electric customer to support solar energy by investing in SunSmart Ames, a community solar farm. Learn more how you can make your energy greener at www.sunsmartames.com.